bringing you the latest research, tools, and common sense tips you need to get and stay healthy. It's Talk Healthy Today. Here's Lisa Davis.
So glad you're listening to Talk Healthy Today. It's Foodie Friday. Remember, if you like Foodie Friday and Talk Healthy Today on Tuesdays, which is all health and wellness, be sure to subscribe and rate and review on iTunes because I don't want you to miss a thing. Joining us now is someone who has been on my shows for years. I just think he is amazing. It is Johnny Bowden, PhD, CNS. We're going to be talking about his book, The 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth, The Surprising Unbiased Truth About What You Should Eat and Why. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, Lisa. So good to be back with you.
I love having you on the show. We always have fun. We always, you know, talk about how the whole cholesterol myth and saturated fat and all that stuff.
I know. It's so much fun.
Right? It is so much fun. All right. So I like that you say the surprising unbiased truth, because that means that some of these foods are going to surprise us. But before we jump into that, give us a little bit about your background and when you first got interested in healthy living.
Well, yeah, I was, this is a second career. Well, it's an old second career by now, but I was a professional musician, for most of my adult life, up until 1990. And I was exactly what you would think a musician who came out of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll era of Woodstock would look like, and the kind of health that they would be in. I woke up at 11 in the morning. I had coffee and cigarettes for breakfast. I mean, I was a mess and you know, overweight and completely out of shape. And I tell you, we'd be on the road with all these actors, and actually just out of boredom, I would start like hanging out with them and going, you guys, you all lift weights and you stay in shape. How do you do this stuff? And they'd sort of show me a couple of exercises in between the cigarettes, you know, and I just got bitten by the fitness bug. I don't know what happened. I just started going to the gyms with the actors when we'd go on the road. Before long, I knew where every gym in every city was. And I started eating better, and it took me a little bit of time. I didn't have one of those instantaneous transformations. I was one of the guys that would go to the gym, do a set of bench presses, and then go outside and have a cigarette in between, you know. So it took me a while to make these kinds of transformations. But when I did, I became like a lot of people who chose health and fitness as a second career, became a little bit of a zealot. Because, you know, when you see the changes that happen in your own life, you see the weight come off, you see the energy improve, you see all of these things happen, you just want to tell everybody about it. And around 1990, I thought, I wonder if I could get like a degree in this kind of thing. I mean, how do you learn more about this? You know, being an overeducated middle class New York City Jew, you know, I was immediately like, there must be an academic way to do it. I got to get a degree. So actually what I did was I became certified as a personal trainer, and I loved it so much that I started amassing certifications. I actually wound up with six major certifications in personal training, and I started working at Equinox. And I started with Equinox with those guys when they opened their very first gym in New York City. I rose to become the dean of the Equinox Fitness Training Institute, where we, taught trainers, and which is still the model for how they train trainers across the country in different gyms. And then I got more interested in nutrition, and I went back to school. I got my certification and my PhD, and I started moving into nutrition, and then I got a writing gig and wrote my first book, and I've been writing a book a year since then, and now here we are in 2018, and 15 books later, and a lot of television appearances, and here we are.
That is so awesome. And I laughed extra loud because I'm Jewish too. So I'm a Jew from California. So the West Coast. But any rate, okay, so let's jump into these foods, because some of them, you know, I mean, like blueberries, things like that. But what are some of the foods you think that would surprise us?
Well, yes, there's no surprises in the fact that berries are great and wild salmon is great and all of that. And I do think that the book does have lots of anecdotes and stories and interesting things about the food. So I try to make it interesting that way. But I think some of the surprising things are, for example, take a look at the soy section. Oh, you can't find it. How interesting.
I was wondering. I'm like, wait, what? And even in the table of contents, I was like, soy. And I thought, that surprises me in a book by Johnny.
So for example, I asked about 14 or 15 A-list health gurus to contribute their top 10 list of food, their personal favorites, the ones that they ate on heavy rotation, not just the ones they recommended, but like, what do they gravitate towards? What's in their cupboard and refrigerator? And we updated that list of experts for the 10th anniversary edition, which just came out. A few of them, you know, were not as well known anymore. I got some really big, bold names from who are really happening now, like David Perlmutter, for example. And the interesting thing is that not one of the experts I interviewed in 2007, nor of the experts I interviewed this year for the new edition, not one listed a soy food in their top 10 foods. So I think many people will find it surprising that soy is not among the 150 healthiest foods on earth. They may find it surprising that coffee is, that some of the things that they were told for years, like avoid all saturated fat, avoid all animal products, that is not true. And so, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's in there that is kind of counterintuitive if you've grown up with the low fat, you know, with the ethos of the last 40 years, you know, cut back on fat, don't go near animal products, eat lots of vegetable oils. All of that is kind of exposed to be the untruths that they really are in the book, The 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth. So people will be very happy to learn that they can drink coffee again and they don't have to eat soy 14 times a week and, you know, things like that.
Well, you know, I'm still not a big fan of dairy. I think maybe if it's grass fed or if it's organic or raw, where do you stand on dairy for people who haven't seen your book?
Well, there's a theoretical answer to that and there's a personal answer to that. So I'll start with the personal. One of the foods I cannot live without, one of the foods that is always going to be in my refrigerator at any time that you might inspect it, something that I consume every single week, is raw milk. Now, you can't get raw milk in all 50 states. We're lucky enough to be able to get it in California. You can get it at farmers markets and through collectives. But raw, unpasteurized, unhomogenized milk, right from the cow, ice cold, maybe one of the greatest drinks I've ever had and one of the most health-giving drinks. However, that said, there is a portion of the population who does not tolerate dairy. 80% of the people in the world are lactose intolerant. Now, what I've found in personal experience and working with clients over the years is that many people who are sensitive to dairy or think they're allergic to dairy or just don't handle it well, when you start giving them much higher quality dairy, whey protein, grass-fed, raw milk, they sometimes can tolerate that a lot better and they're surprised. However, that said, if you are, my premise from the beginning of my career has always been biochemical individuality. We are all different. We're different hormonally, metabolically, just in every manner that you can imagine, we have different shades of things. You know, you can see this on dating sites. We have different tastes. You know, some people like bald men, some people like tall men. You know, it's all over the board. And we have to respect that and stop looking for perfect diets or perfect foods and instead start to look for perfect matches between our metabolism and what we're eating. And so I would say that for people who are sensitive to dairy and don't respond well, and they maybe create a lot of mucus or they have different low-grade, I don't want to call them allergies, but sensitivity reactions, not a great choice. For someone like me who does not have those reactions, I am in love with raw milk. I do not touch homogenized, store-bought, pasteurized milk at all. But I do drink the raw stuff, and I do consume some Swiss cheese and lots of yogurt. So I think it's a very individual thing. I don't think any of those foods are necessarily bad, but they are not necessarily perfect for everybody.
All right. I'm so glad we talked about that. Okay. So beans and legumes. So people always say, oh, you're paleo, right? I say, well, I'm mostly paleo, very vegetable heavy paleo, but I do like my beans and legumes because they don't bother me. So where do you stand on that? Because it seems
Here's the background. So that anybody who's not quite sure what we're talking about here, the classic paleo diet, as devised by Professor Lauren Cordain in the 90s, and then, you know, carried on the tradition to Rob Wolf and the paleo prescription and Mark Sisson and Primal Blueprint. All the paleo stuff started with the premise, or one of the premises, one of the cornerstones of it was no beans, no legumes. And the reason for that is that beans contain something called lectins. And lectins are little proteins that can be very inflammatory for some people. And, you know, there's theories that they interact with certain blood types more than others. So the paleo gods kind of just said, no beans, no lectins. Now, when Dr. Stephen Massley and I wrote our book, Smart Fat,
I love him.
isn't he great? So we considered, discussing different approaches, and we considered the paleo and the bean prescription, you know, the anti-bean prescription. And Dr. Massley, who's far more research-oriented than I am, I mean, he keeps data on all the patients in his clinics and he's published studies and stuff, said that here's the deal. Only 10% of the population is sensitive to lectins. So, obviously, if you're one of those, you don't want to eat beans. But the problem is that beans are one of the most nutritious foods on the planet. It's not just that they're the fiber heavyweights and that we now know how important fiber is for the microbiome. It's antioxidants. They're just an incredibly healthy food. So to cut them out completely because 10% of the population doesn't belong with them doesn't seem to me to be very smart. So I am a big fan of beans and legumes, but only for those people who don't have reactions to them.
Yeah, I love them. I mean, I'm already, excited later to have lentil soup for lunch. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you can hear it. My stomach is growling so loud.
Just because of lentil soup, I know. But, if there's a theme here, I think if there's one single theme to all of what we're talking about, it's that we're all individuals, and it's not so much about finding the perfect diet or the perfect food. It's about finding the right match with your particular metabolism. Now, that's some of the hard work that a lot of people don't want to do. They just want to be told what to eat. They just want to be given the rules. They don't want to really do their own investigation. But ultimately, the action is in really doing some self-experimentation, seeing how foods make you feel, what's your energy like, what's your sleep like, what are your bathroom habits like. All of these things are affected by food: mood, hunger, cravings, sleep, energy, all of them. And so I am a big proponent in experimentation. Sure, you start with the book and you say, these are the great foods, these do these wonderful things, and then you got to figure out if they work for you.
You know, I completely agree. As a matter of fact, I spent the whole weekend feeling crappy because I don't usually eat pizza, and I had pizza, and then a couple days before I had a bunch of almonds, and this is like heartbreaking, and people listen to the show, they know this. I have nut sensitivities. They make me really tired. Like, I can eat almonds maybe once every couple weeks, but if I eat them like 3 days in a row, it's like I'm sick. I just get so exhausted.
Really?
And yeah, it's like the worst thing, I tell you. But at any rate, so I just spent the whole... Isn't that weird? Yeah. So I spent the whole weekend feeling crappy.
Oh.
And it was only today I woke up and I'm like, I feel like myself again. So I know what I should eat and not eat. I'm also really sensitive to grains, even whole grains. So I don't eat them very often. Whereas my husband, and yes, I know I mentioned this on the show, he can eat grains till the cows come home, whole grains.
Yep.
And he is lean and strong, but he also exercises like a maniac.
Yep.
But I do better on the paleo with the legumes diet.
Yep.
And, he has more flexibility. And then my daughter, she's 13. She's like a dairyaholic. But every time she eats it, I only get her like the good stuff. She gets all phlegmy. And she insists it's not because of the dairy. And
they
I'm like, honey,
do.
Look,
it's so
every
interesting.
Single.
My brother.
It's
God
so
bless
annoying.
All, my brother wakes up every morning snorting and coughing.
Yes.
And like, with phlegm. And Jeffrey,
what
do you do every night before? What you got? Drinks a huge glass of milk every night, does not make the connection, will not buy the connection, doesn't believe in the connection. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she just gets too heartbroken about it and she gets overwhelmed. Yeah. I'm like, okay, let's just take it out for a week. And then somehow she's like, oh, I forgot. I went to so-and-so's house. And she's, no. But anyway, there really is a connection, right? And you have to really look at it closely. I mean, I did a whole food elimination diet because it turned out I was sensitive to a whole bunch of different foods. And, my best meal is some organic grass-fed little steak, a yam, an avocado, a big salad. If I could just stick to that, I would feel great all the time, but it's like, I really wanted that pizza, once in a while.
Look, there's got to be a place. I've said this probably since the beginning of my career. There's got to be a place for recreational eating. I mean, eating is one
Definitely.
Of the joys of life, and it's a social thing and it bonds people. What we have to do is figure out a way to have that and at the same time keep our health, because really, you know, if the food isn't right, nothing else is going to be right.
Let's jump into sweeteners. I'm really big on xylitol, a little bit of erythritol. Where do you stand on things like that? Not a lot, just a little.
I've always liked xylitol. Like erythritol a lot. And I like stevia.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's an aftertaste, although
aftertaste, although I have found a brand called Pure, P-Y-U-R-E, that's organic and about the same price as all the other stevia, and it doesn't seem to have the bitter aftertaste, so that's the one I use.
Well, you know what's a nice one, too, and I have no affiliation, but it's called Steviva, and they have a whole bunch of mixes. It's amazing. I mean, they have stevia mixed with erythritol, stevia mixed with monk fruit,
yeah,
stevia
I've
mixed
seen
with
those.
Agave.
New Naturals has that also. These are some good companies.
Nice.
They make some good stuff. I'm not much of a cook or a baker, so I don't know about the qualities. I know that xylitol is not supposed to stand up to heat very well, so these are things are out of my area of expertise. But there's nothing wrong with xylitol. There's nothing wrong with erythritol, Truvia, or stevia. Those are the ones that I would recommend.
I mean, one thing I like to do is I'll get unsweetened nut butter, and then I'll just sprinkle a little bit of xylitol on top, and then
get on
whole grain toast, right? And that way I can get the unsweetened without my daughter saying, but I like the sweeter. The one thing is you have to be careful if you have dogs. And by the way, I love the picture of you and your dog in the book. Is that a pit? Because I have a pit, and he's the love of my life.
Dogs, so I have to remember which one.
There's a picture of a white one. It looks like a pit.
Oh, that's Lucy. That's my Argentine Dogo. No, she's not a pit bull. She's actually Argentine Dogo.
Oh, she's beautiful.
Yeah, and my first Argentine Dogo was in the first edition of the book, but she is no longer with us. But this is Lucy, and she is the successor to that one. And yes.
Oh, well, that's nice. You know, now I have a book coming out called Clean Eating, Dirty Sex, which I know you would love because it's got great information.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Send it over.
And as soon as I have copies, it has over 50 recipes and they're all pretty much paleo except some beans. So it's like right up your alley. As a matter of fact, I interviewed Dr. Masley for the book. So
did you?
Very, very, he's wonderful. Yeah. Very, very excited. All right, so people should get this book because you're going to find out what to eat and you're also going to find out why they're good. I mean, I love that you give all these great details about all these different foods.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's interesting because after all, you could write a book like this and make it very dry and encyclopedic and nobody would read it. But to know like what foods were used in fertility rituals and how some of the traditions came about, you know, with pomegranates, for example, and they're just really, really interesting stories. And so I put in as many anecdotes, personal stories, you know, little tidbits and things as I could to make it a little more interesting.
It is fun. You know, I recently did an interview with a woman named Jennifer, I think it's Sartell. She wrote a book called Epic Eggs. Mm-hmm. And all about if you want to have your own eggs and you want to have chickens and what to do. It was really interesting. So, I mean, eggs is such a great food. And, of course, you have information about that. And I love that you say the effect of eggs on heart disease has exactly zero to do with their cholesterol content.
Correct.
Again, back to that. So important. How do we get people away from that the dominant paradigm of saturated fat is bad? I mean, it seems like it's more common, but I'll still talk to people who look at me like I have 12, you know, horns or something. Like,
honestly, I will tell you, Lisa, that I have said this many times in private. I'll say it now. I don't think it's going to happen in our lifetime. I think it's going to take another generation before this nonsense about saturated fat and cholesterol completely dies out. I think 100 years from now, when none of us are here, scientists and people who deal with health policy will look back on this time of cholesterol madness and saturated fat demonization, and they will smack their palm to their forehead and go, "What were these people thinking?" It will appear to be as ludicrous and absurd as it really is, but that it's just too hard to get people to. For 40 years, we've been hearing how bad saturated fat is. And we've been hearing, you know, how to avoid animal products. And we should all be having lots of vegetable oil and stuff like that. And it's just not true. But it will take a very, very long time. And for the medical profession, who is so married to the whole statin paradigm, I think it's going to take a long time for that to die out. And it's probably going to take another generation of doctors. And I'm seeing it more and more at nutrition conferences. I'm seeing more and more MDs.
Oh, good.
Of course, those are the only MDs that go to nutrition conferences, so that's a very small population of MDs. But you're seeing more and more the movement away from cholesterol. It's just not an important measurement when it comes to heart health. It's I shouldn't say it's not an important measurement. I should say it's an outdated measurement. It's an outdated metric by which to judge the health of your heart.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that was so disheartening, speaking of heart, was the American Heart Association. I am so furious with them over this ridiculous ban on coconut oil, or saying it's bad. And then you see all the connections to the vegetable oil companies and this and that. And then it's just like, wait, what is this really about? It's really not about our health. It's about money. And that's very depressing.
The coconut thing, I mean, talk about fake news. It's just, it's sort of the coconut paper that they put out that everyone reported on as saying, oh, there's a new study showing that coconut oil does blah, 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 was not a new study at all. What it was a review of existing literature on saturated fat and cholesterol. So let's get this very clear. We all know that saturated fat raises cholesterol. It doesn't matter. So all they did was look back on a bunch of studies that confirmed what they already believed, which is true. Saturated fat raises cholesterol. Now, it happens that if you look under the hood and you measure cholesterol in the more modern way, you find that it raises it, but it raises all the good kind of cholesterol and lowers all the bad kind of cholesterol. But that little detail they don't talk about. So, yeah, they say, look, here's evidence again that it raises the cholesterol, and they use cholesterol as a stand-in for heart disease, which it's not. And they go, sure, it's raising the risk for heart disease. And all it was a review of existing studies, and it added nothing new, and it didn't talk about any of the wonderful things coconut oil does for the immune system, for the brain. None of that. They just rehashed the same old cholesterol and saturated fat story that they've been peddling for the last 40 years. There's nothing new
in
that
study. In the last few minutes, I have to ask you a personal question, because I have a loved one that has a very high LDL. And he went on a vegan diet. And I'm saying, no, I don't think that's the right thing to do. So can you give some advice on that for other people out there who are like, okay, I can't eat meat ever again because I have high LDL?
See, first of all, I don't know where that...
I know.
Let me calm
very
down.
Very frustrating. Okay.
Well, first of all, because I would question, I would question the connection between animal foods and LDL. Where are they getting
that? That's a good
First of all, most of the fat in beef is monounsaturated. That's the same kind as comes from olive oil. That's number one.
Well, that's good to know.
Number two is, when people tell me I have high LDL, I ask, great, how did you have it measured? And they say, oh, I don't know, the usual, good and bad cholesterol. Folks, that's 1950s medicine. And listen, if you get nothing else out of this conversation and you're worried about your cholesterol, I beg you, take this take-home point home. There is a test for cholesterol. It's been around for over a decade. It's called the particle test. And it breaks down LDL and HDL into its component parts. See, we used to think back in the 60s, there were two kinds of cholesterol, HDL and LDL, good and bad. Except we now know there's five different kinds of each. There's LDL-A, LDL-B, there's HDL-2A, there's HDL-2B, and they behave differently. So when someone tells me their LDL is high, I don't care. What I want to know is how much of that LDL is LDL-A, and how much is LDL-B? Because LDL-A doesn't do anything bad, and LDL-B does. And if you don't know which is which, then you're just looking at a gross measurement that doesn't really give you anything of value.
So if somebody does have the LDL-B, though, what would be a better diet?
Well, that's a very inflammatory particle. That is something you want to keep an eye on, and it would require a lot of anti-inflammatory foods. And, you know, to reduce that and to change the particle size. Interestingly enough, and there is research on this, anybody who wants to fact check me, look up D-R-E-O-N, Dreon, she's the researcher who showed this. Saturated fat actually changes the particle distribution so that you have less B and more A. So the very thing we've demonized is actually helpful for reducing the bad kind of LDL.
Wow, this is so powerful. I can't wait to get this to my loved one. And so it sounds like obviously a lot of plants are going to be great for anti-inflammatory, but not necessarily cut out meat. But if you do have meat, make sure it's grass-fed, right?
It's got to be grass-fed. And because that's that grass-fed. People do not understand. It's not just a little trendy thing. Oh, that's the latest and it's more expensive. Grass-fed's a different animal. There's no antibiotics. Yeah. There's no steroids. There's no bovine growth hormone. They're eating pasture, so they have higher omega-3s and lower omega-6s, which are inflammatory. It's a different animal. You can't compare
exactly.
the two. You know? Here's what I would tell your loved one. Here's,
yes. Go
you
ahead.
Look up the particle test. It's given all over the country, the particle test. There's different Berkeley Labs has a version of it. There are different labs have different versions of it. Insist that your doctor do that test. Do not take a prescription. Do not do do nothing based on the old-fashioned HDL, LDL. Insist on the more modern particle test, which actually does give you valuable information.
All right. Speaking of valuable information, I just love having you on. I got to have you back.
Thank
Tell
you.
Us all the ways to find out about you and your fantastic
Johnny Bowden. Is just remember, there's no H in Johnny. J-O-N-N-Y-B-O-W-D-E-N. On Twitter, at Johnny Bowden, and on Facebook, Dr. Johnny Bowden. And, of course, my website is www.johnnybowden.com.
Awesome. And as soon as Clean Eating Dirty Sex is in my hands,
send it
I will
over.
Get it to you. You're going to love it. All
okay,
right, everybody, you can pre-order that, by the way, on Amazon. I want to thank everyone for listening. Check us out at Talk Healthy the Number 2 Day on Twitter and Snapchat, Talk Healthy Today Podcast on Facebook. Check me out, Health Media Gal 1. Keep listening, stay well, and be sure to subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. Have a great day.